You are Locked On NBA Draft, your daily podcast on the NBA Draft, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the Locker Room app from the iOS App Store and find one of our Locked On rooms. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. What is up? You are listening to Locked On NBA Draft. I'm your host, Rafael Barlow from NBADraftJunkies.com. And I have my guy, Michael Weisenberg, back on again. I had him on. I want to say it was like right before the Final Four. We talked about the players that I thought had, or we thought had helped their draft stock during the NCAA tournament. I am live from Detroit, Michigan. This is not my home. It's a little chilly here. I'm coming from Dallas where it's already summertime, and I get here to Detroit and it's, you know, it's still a little nippy out. And then you're in Portland?
I'm in Portland, Oregon. Yes, sir.
Where the Blazers won today.
Did.
And they're going to have fans, right?
They're having 10% capacity initially, and hopefully it goes up from there.
I'm a Blazers fan. Mikey's a Blazers fan. And I'm sure you saw the quotes from Dame Lillard where he talks about we're going to be the only team that doesn't have fans. So
I think that pushed it to the 10% that they're getting. And after that road trip, it's just nice to have some people back in the Moda Center.
Yeah, definitely, man. I'm hoping the Blazers can make a run. I've been seeing the rumors that without a deep playoff run, Stotts might be fired, which I don't necessarily think it's his fault. You know, I mean, if you're playing Melo and Cantor combined 50 minutes a game, your defense isn't going to be great. I mean, they both have, I felt like, been really big contributors. Just having both of them together on the floor in the playoffs is going to be tough.
It's the killer off the bench. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a whole different subject. But I wanted to talk to you today about prospects that you feel are underrated. If you had to rank a player that you feel like is not getting the love that he deserves, who is that player on your list? Who's the first player that comes to mind for you?
Well, every time I think about underrated or overrated, I'm thinking about what list to use because you need to go to the ratings for that. And the list that I decided to use was a great composite big board at rookiescale.com, run by John Chepkevich, who's been with Pro Basketball Combine. And a player that I saw on that list that I felt is fairly underrated at this point is Trey Murphy, the third, out of Virginia. And I was very surprised to see that he was at the 40th spot on the board that takes into account like a lot of mainstream boards, some from Draft Twitter, and it weighs them. And with Trey Murphy, you know, he has the size, he has the sweet shooting touch, the defensive ability, also combined with athleticism. He had a bit of a late growth spurt, so has some of those guard skills as well. That was a player that I was a little surprised to see is still kind of considered almost like in the mid-second round range as opposed to possibly being like maybe even like mid to late first, at least as a possibility.
What's funny is, and this is an honest to God statement, maybe about 2 or 3 hours ago. So I'm in Detroit, like I mentioned, and I'm doing some video work for a friend of mine that trains a bunch of kids from NBA players to 5-year-olds. So one of his clients, or somebody that he's been training for years, is Harlan Beverly, plays for the University of Miami. So whenever I talk to Harlan, I talk about, you know, how his season went, and I haven't talked to him since last summer. And I said, okay, you know, playing in the ACC, which players did you feel like were impressive to you? Which players did you feel like were overrated? And the player that he said that he felt like was impressive to him, that he really liked his game, was Trey Murphy. And he mentioned that he felt like he was a little bit under the radar and didn't understand why he wasn't getting the love as other players that are ranked a lot higher than him. And it's funny that this is the first name you mentioned when we just had this. I just had this conversation with somebody a few hours ago. And in your opinion, why do you think he's under the radar?
I think that he wasn't exactly like flashy. He wasn't even the leading scorer on Virginia. He comes from a situation where he was a transfer from Rice. And so, you know, coming from that smaller school, and like, also let's be real, like Virginia doesn't necessarily give you like a ton of statistical shine, but and then a lot of it with him is theoretical as well. Like, you know, where they think he's going to need to gain strength. But he really fits a role where you could see him as this, first of all, like great size for somebody that you feel can play on the wing, a great shot, and then also with that potential defensive versatility to guard a few positions. So yeah, I think that he is somebody that at least could rise, but right now I think he is a little bit under the radar.
And he's fairly young. I mean, he's still only 20. Yeah. And after playing 3 years of college basketball. So I mean, I guess he'll just be turning 21 on draft day. But mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me. He shot 43%, had the you know, what's the, I don't know the word I'm looking for, but when you're a shooter, the benchmark you're looking for is 50, 40, 90. And mm-hmm. He had those numbers this year. And like you said, he has the size. And it may be a Virginia thing. He only averaged 11 points per game, but Virginia is not the most appealing to watch, and they play at such a slower pace. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me that his name isn't mentioned as, you know, a lock to be a first round pick. Who else do you feel like is sliding under the radar?
A guy that I like, and he is maybe at least a bit lower than I would rank him, but I just think he's going to be a really good role player on both ends of the floor is Miles Deuce McBride. And
you've been saying this, I think every podcast you are like, between Duarte and McBride, those are the two guys that you're driving the bandwagon.
He's trying. And with McBride, he is only like 6'2". He's not necessarily a traditional like point guard. He's more of that combo, but I think he can defend either guard position. He is one of like the best transition defenders and a great point of attack defender. Also a really good off-ball defender. Just like the versatility he brings in, the instincts that he brings on the defensive end of the floor, along with like the tenacity, I would say. Really improved as a shooter as well. I think he's a pretty good athlete. The other thing is I think he has like around a 6'8" wingspan, so that really helps. But yeah, he is somebody that I have been pretty high on, and I just think he like really fits the mold of a good defensive guard that I know like guard defense is always kind of hard to quantify, but with him, I think it's pretty special. And I think with the shooting that he brings as well, that could be something that is very like an attractive bet at the end of the first round.
Do you think he's the most improved player in the country, or at least should be mentioned there, because only started 2 games as a freshman, only 30% from 3, moved it up to about 41% on 3.8 attempts per game. I have 2 questions. Again, do you think he's the most improved prospect in this class from freshman to sophomore season? And are you buying into the long-term shooting?
I don't know if he is the most improved prospect in this class. I actually think I have somebody else on the list who really improved from his freshman year to his sophomore year. But I really like, it's hard not to buy the shooting. Like I thought that it just looked a lot better. He was really confident with it. And do I think he's coming into the NBA as a 40% 3-point shooter? No, but there was enough improvement there, and it just, it looked good. And I think the improved free throw percentage as well, his more willingness to take pull-ups, I think those are all really good signs as far as his shooting is concerned.
On paper, the jump was tremendous. Three-point percentage went up 11 points. The free throw percentage went up from about 75 to 81. And the field goal percentage, it went up like 3 points. But overall, I mean, his production almost doubled in pretty much every statistical category. So that's why I wanted to get your opinion on if he was like the biggest improvement, because I didn't really see his name on a lot of lists as a NBA prospect, even first round or late second round prospect coming into the season. And I definitely feel like he's played himself into possibly being someone that could, you could see drafted maybe late first round. That could be a stretch, but definitely draft, you know, definitely someone that I think will get drafted. All right. When we return, I'll talk to Mikey about a few more prospects that he feels are sliding under the radar. I'm excited to tell you about a new podcast that I think you're going to enjoy called Death at the Wing. It's a sports documentary podcast hosted by Adam McKay, the writer and director behind The Big Short, Vice, and Anchorman. Now, in the 1980s, which is the era that helped, I guess, start my love for basketball, there were players like Magic Johnson and Dr. J becoming household names and bringing a faster and flashier style of play that captivated TV audiences. But along the way to wealth and stardom, just everything going on in the 80s took its toll on the next generation of basketball. And never in the history, really, of any sport have we seen so many players that were ready to become stars face so many tragedies as far as deaths in such a short amount of time. McKay did a good job on this documentary. He was joined by a host of sports journalists and experts who lived through these moments in the history and just kind of discuss this overlooked phenomenon and the web of social, political, and cultural forces at play. If you love The Last Dance or 30 for 30, I think you're going to love Death at the Wing. Please search for Death at the Wing wherever you get your podcasts and start listening. Get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. All right, you're listening to Locked On NBA Draft. This is Rafael Barlow from NBA Draft Junkies with Michael Weisenberg from the Viseland podcast. Well, he's one half of the Viseland podcast. Who is the next player that you feel like is not getting the love he deserves?
With you talking about a player who maybe made the biggest jump from his freshman to his sophomore season, let's bring up the name Trey Mann, because I think Trey Mann literally grew as a prospect in that he was, I believe, listed at 6'3" as a freshman, grew to be listed at 6'5". And I think you could really see the results on the court as well. And he was somebody that was very highly rated coming out of high school, was McDonald's All-American, known for just his pull-up game, his really quick release. And this year, he was so much more comfortable, obviously given a much longer leash. And he showed a lot of development in terms of his half-court scoring, his playmaking, and his ability to work off of the dribble, which, you know, after his freshman year, I know a lot of people were kind of down on him as a draft prospect, but this year he certainly has risen. And right now on the composite big board for rookie scale, he's at 21. And I have a feeling he could be drafted like possibly in the lottery, maybe even like 10 picks higher than what he's listed right now.
Possibly lottery. That's very interesting. That's the highest I've seen by far. But when I do videos on my YouTube channel, I usually like to break down the players by category. So it can be something like scoring off the dribble, outside shooting. He makes me want to create a new category called three-point shot creator, because most of his three-point attempts are not assisted. They're created by him. Like, so when I did my notes, I had creates his own threes, and then I did a deep dive into the numbers. Only 32% of his threes were assisted. He shot 40% off the dribble, had a 53.3 effective field goal percentage off the dribble. He ranked sixth in the NCAA in points per possession on jump shots off the dribble, ranked 21st in the nation on field goal percentage on jumpers off the dribble, but that was for guys with a minimum of 100 attempts. And here's the craziest one. He only had 31 catch and shoot attempts all season. And he made 35%. So he's like the rare prospect that shoots a lot better off the bounce than he does in catch and shoot situations. So my question for you is, how do you think that will affect him in his role in the NBA?
I'm almost wondering, with that correlation, is maybe that was part of like just his the context of his playing at Florida was how much he needed to create. Like with that sample size of him off of the catch, it's just obviously like the fact that I don't think he was used as much running off ball and shooting off movement. But I just feel like that's something that he could certainly add. But I think the creation ability and the fact that he is able to create all of those shot attempts, like that's something that every NBA team needs. Yep. And I think that's really what makes him a very enticing prospect. So yeah, I think he'll have more of an opportunity to play off of the ball, but his on-ball equity, I think, is what makes him really, really interesting.
And so you would select him late lottery?
Yeah, I think that I certainly need to update my board, but I'm certainly, I know on my last mock draft, I had him ranked 15th, and that's based on what I felt the NBA was going to do. And, but obviously every time you do a mock draft like this early, you're kind of thinking with your own board as well. And yeah, I think I would certainly have him around that range.
I think I had him going to Atlanta. It was, well, I had him at 20. Oh, really?
But but at the time, they were 15.
Okay. So I had the time I did mine, they were like 20th. And I had him going to Atlanta. I thought that would have been a pretty interesting combination with him and Trae Young, you know, just either, well, obviously he's not going to start, but possibly coming off the bench or just some lineups with him and Trae Young playing together. I thought that would be a pretty interesting fit, but Atlanta just seems to have so many guards and wings that I guess no matter who they select is going to be redundant to what they already have.
Yeah. Yeah. And can use some depth. And the thing with Trae Mann and Trae Young is with Trae Young, he wasn't able to shoot off ball a lot in college either. And that's become part of his wheelhouse as well.
Yep. All right. Who's the next player you want to bring up?
I think we can bring up, let's talk about Jaden Springer, who is somebody with just a very wide range. He, I believe, will be the youngest player of the college prospects in the NBA draft. And he won't even be 19 on draft day. Birthday is September 25th, 2002. He is somebody that I think has some possible like creation equity as well. Shot very well on a very low sample size, but at least has some confidence there. And the thing that you really love about him is just how strong he is considering his age, especially. And his defensive ability, like his ability to go over screens, like and you know, just guard multiple positions and do some really good things on ball. But yeah, he's somebody that is 17th on the consensus big board, and I think that he could be a lottery prospect as well.
Here's a somewhat of a hot take. When I look at what teams like about him, it sounds very similar to what everyone was saying about Frank Ntilikina in 2017. not saying they're the same player, but I feel like there's some similarities as far as like what people like about him. Frank was young. They liked the size. There was debate if he's a one or if he's a two, he's a combo. I know when I look at my notes, I have Springer plays a little bit too unselfish at times. Not a lot of offensive creativity as far as like shake and bake, getting his own shot. I feel like that was something that I had said about Frank. Just doesn't have like great blow-by speed and tendency to pick up his dribble. Not a great vertical athlete. And it's like, man, am I watching Frank all over again? But the positives, I don't want to just go on to all the negatives. Can play both guard spots, good passing instincts, upside as a floor spacer, more so of a driving kick passer than like a really creative playmaker, but good pace and patience, and has good body control, good feel, and a pretty decent decision maker, and young for his class. And I feel like those are all the same things that I was saying about Frank in 2017. In your opinion, what is the difference at the same stage?
Yeah, and maybe this was just people being like really high on Frank's creation equity, but I think that Springer's maybe shown a bit more of a handle in like a half court setting, whereas Frank I think was kind of seen like as that guy who has like point guard ability. But he was always kind of like, you know, wing size, defensive versatility. And I don't think he was necessarily like as strong as Jaden Springer is.
No, not at all. He's not as strong today.
Yeah. So I think that's something that really helps as well. But yeah, I can understand the possible apprehension with the reminder to Frank Ntilikina, who is somebody who looked like he was certainly on the path to at least being a viable NBA player, but hasn't necessarily taken those steps in what is now his fourth season in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I still think Frank is going to be solid. I think he needs a total change of scenery, and I think you'll see him maybe closer to what was expected of him. But I just feel like in New York, it's a situation where it seems like they don't have plans for him, but they're not moving him either.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they're going to have to make a decision, obviously, at the end of his rookie scale deal. And then he met Tom Thibodeau, who, if you're not in the rotation, you're getting very few minutes.
Yeah. All right. A prospect that I wanted to get your opinion on, and I'm not as high on him as others, Zaire Williams. Mm-hmm.
Zaire Williams is somebody that I've kind of gone across the board with as well. But what I'm seeing with him, and yes, he did like downright struggle at Stanford this year, had a few positive flashes, but very few. And then you look at his numbers and there's definitely room for concern, especially considering the fact that he was considered this big time, like, you know, shot maker, and he didn't shoot very well from three-point range. He didn't shoot very well from three-point range in the EYBL either. But he's somebody who I think, you know, at 6'9", he's a good passer. He certainly has feel for the game. And then the thing that I think stands out with him is his versatility on defense as well. Like, I think he can really move on the perimeter at 6'9". And then I do think he has shot making ability. He did shoot well from the free throw line. And he's somebody whose shot just looks beautiful. And I think that shooting is definitely something that you can work on as time goes on. We've seen with many, many a prospect. And I think that there's a baseline there. I think injuries were certainly a part of the reason he had a tough time at Stanford as well. And I think at times he was playing hurt. But I very much understand the reason for kind of wondering why he would be like underrated at this point. He's ranked at 19th on the composite big board from rookie scale. But he is somebody that like, I think there is like legitimate upside there. And I still find him to be a pretty intriguing prospect.
He was tough for me to evaluate. And one of the things that I had to ask myself when I watched his film was, is he healthy? Because I know like the first few games, he had that huge knee brace on his knee.
Yep.
And then it just didn't seem like he was, you know, just bouncy or athletic. So like one of the things I had as a area for improvement or what I didn't like, I felt like he was too straight up on his drives and that he settled for too many jumpers. But that could have been directly related to him being hurt. You know, if you have a knee injury, you're probably less likely to, you know, attack the rim, unless you're Cole Anthony, who last year, after he missed like a significant part of the season, had like a stretch where he shot like 30 free throws in two games coming back for a knee injury. And that's just a different mentality. But yeah, I just felt like Zaire didn't get to the free throw line, settled for too many jumpers, and he settled for a lot of jumpers and he wasn't efficient shooting. But the positives are, like you said, he looks like he has a decent handle. He has a high upside as a shot creator. And, you know, there's some potential as like a pick and roll ball handler. And then, of course, like just the size.
Yeah.
So how much of this are you putting into what you saw in high school versus what you saw in college? If he didn't come into the season with the hype surrounding him and he was, you know, a guy that you never heard of, would you still have him as a first round grade based off of what you saw?
Yeah, I likely would not. But at the same time, I think as we've seen, like with I'm at least speaking with analytics people and everything like that, like having that high school, you know, pre-college sample from him in EYBL with Oakland Soldiers and with Sierra Canyon, that really helps. And I know like EYBL numbers sometimes correlate better with NBA numbers than even college numbers. And he is somebody that I think the other major thing that I forgot to talk about with him that is, I think maybe the biggest thing with him is his strength. And
or lack thereof.
Yeah, exactly. Gets knocked off balance very easily.
Yeah.
And I think that was at least part of it as well. But he's somebody who I think teams may have like kind of like fear of missing out on. And almost like in the Trey Murphy mold of this guy who could be like this 3-and-D wing. And yeah, like I think with Zaire, you even get like that ball handling equity and the ability to shoot off of the dribble. So yeah, I just think that he's maybe not like crazy underrated by those rankings, but I think he's at least like, he's somebody who could certainly go higher than where he's ranked right now.
Could he possibly be this year's Jaden McDaniels?
Yeah, it's certainly possible. And as we saw, that turned out to be a mistake. And I think Jaden McDaniels should have gone quite a bit higher. But yeah, like he was another player who by like most metrics didn't have a fantastic freshman season and had like a negative net rating. And then we see in the NBA, like a lot of the pre-high school things that were said about him and some of the flashes he had at UW have certainly translated. And he looks like a pretty nice, like, combo forward for Minnesota.
When we return, I'll pick Mikey's brain on a few other guys. Actually, you know what? I want to talk about Josh Christopher and BJ Boston and Jeremiah Robinson Earl. So I'll get Mikey's opinion on those when we return. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props are almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today. and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts, promo code LOCKEDON. If you've been listening to the Locked On Network, then you know we've been telling you about Built Bar, which is the best tasting protein bar on the market. We've been telling you about this for quite a while, but if you haven't, Built Bar is this amazing low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, amazing tasting protein bar that is 100% chocolate on each and every bar. And if you missed it, we had what we call Built Bar Madness, which was like an NCAA tournament style competition between all of the Built Bars. And the champion was Coconut Brownie Chunk over Mint Brownie Chunk. It was a tough competition. But if you missed it and you didn't vote or you have another opinion, you can try all the different flavors. Go to BuiltBar.com or at @bar_built on Twitter. Remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 and you will get 15% off your next order. That is LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order at BuiltBar.com. And now you can see, if you disagree with the champion, you can decide which is the best tasting protein bar. Get more analysis on the top prospects available in this year's NBA draft with the Locked On NBA Draft podcast. We have scouting reports, draft rumors, mock drafts, and full coverage of March Madness 4 days a week from credentialed draft experts like myself. Follow the Locked On NBA Draft podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. All right, right off the bat, Josh Christopher, underrated or right where he should be based off of rookie scale?
I think that he is slightly underrated based off of rookie scale. He's at 28 right now. I think there's certainly a chance he could be drafted higher, and I would have him higher than 28. He is somebody who just did not play a ton of games during his freshman year. And in those games, he didn't necessarily quell all of the concerns surrounding his game, but his ability to create off of the dribble, his size, his athleticism, I think are all things that should really help him. And I think at least give the vision of his being able to be that valuable wing scorer.
Yeah, only played 15 games. The big concern for me was the outside shooting. He only shot 30% from three. Really struggled to me in catch and shoot situations. But I really, really like him as a one-on-one scorer, shot creator. I know in my notes, I put down that he looks like he's a guy that has watched a lot of film of Kobe Bryant and James Harden, and he tries to play a little bit like them. And the biggest step for me, or the biggest area that I would like to see him improve on, is in order to reach his full potential as a shot creator and scorer, is to be able to create for others. He didn't turn the ball over a lot, but he had a negative assist to turnover ratio. And I felt like once the ball got in his hands, it didn't move anymore. I felt like he was a ball stopper. I felt like he was so confident in his ability to put the ball in the basket that sometimes his confidence led to some really crazy shot attempts. And early in the shot clock, but I love the mentality. He's aggressive. He has a floater. He, is good in isolation. He has the offensive creativity off the dribble. He has athleticism. He plays hard, quick first step. Then the strength. He is really strong. He's rock solid, 215 pounds, which you don't really see guys 6'5", 215. What is the biggest difference between him and Anthony Edwards, in your opinion?
I would say if you saw the P3 stats of their of Anthony Edwards' absurd acceleration and athletic ability, I think that's the major difference there. And Anthony Edwards, as much as Josh Christopher does have the NBA ready body, Anthony Edwards was a very different level, I think, also. But yeah, there certainly are some similarities. I just don't think Josh is quite as explosive. but he is a terror in transition.
Yeah.
I'll say a large part of the passing and everything like that, which I think has been a comment about him like throughout his high school process as well. But team context certainly didn't help the situation either. And, you know, he was playing with guards who kind of did some of the similar things that people attributed to him. So, yep. Yeah, I think certainly Arizona State wasn't what we had hoped they would be. And Josh Christopher's season, therefore, wasn't what we hoped it would be. But he did show some really nice flashes. And the fact that you're even comparing him to Anthony Edwards, I think, is like at least slightly a positive.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like when you look at the notes and you compare them, there were some similarities. Some of the concerns about Edwards we had about or were having about Christopher. And now I agree 100%. He's not as explosive as Ant. But I also feel like the success Anthony Edwards has had may possibly help Christopher out around draft time. I mean, Anthony Edwards had, last I looked, he had 42 tonight. And it was, 42 points on 17 of 22. I think he's making a run for Rookie of the Year. I mean, I think right now it's definitely the Mellows, but Edwards is averaging 19 points a game.
Yeah.
Close to 5 rebounds and 3 assists. I think that Christopher may end up being this guy that gets drafted late first round. It's probably best for him maybe to go to a team early in the second round. He'll go to a bad team and he'll probably get a lot more shot attempts. But, and the reason I say it's probably best for him in that sense is because all the team, or he's projected to go is late first round. All the teams that are in that range are probably looking for floor spacers. And he probably just doesn't really come in and play a complementary role that early on, like a really good team. Like if it's the Lakers or the Bucks, or I don't know. I would think some of those teams would be looking for somebody that can come in and space the floor, but also he could be like a really great steal for one of those teams.
Yeah. Yeah. The shooting is a huge wild card with him, but if he goes to a team, get some reps, he's somebody I ultimately see as like being like that microwave bench scorer kind of player. Yeah. I think there certainly are pathways to him possibly being a starting level player as well.
All right. BJ Boston, another divisive prospect in a sense, someone whose high school reputation is probably helping him and on mocks as opposed to how he looked. So are you in the middle? Are you weighing it more off of prior to Kentucky or what you saw?
Yeah, you have to combine both things that you saw. But I think that his pre-high school sample was very promising and maybe like led to, I think, a little too much hype about him in the beginning. But he's a guy who's 6'7". Has like, you know, plus 5 or so wingspan, and he can handle the ball. He certainly like was a creative finisher. I think where he really struggled was with shooting and with strength. And in Kentucky was just kind of a mess as a team. Like they didn't necessarily have the best chemistry. And he showed that he wasn't really like that primary initiator level guy, but he still at least showed some creation ability. And I think like throughout his high school career also, like obviously he was one of the better players with Sierra Canyon, but with AOT and EYBL, like he was always like that really good complementary piece and athletic guy. Just in terms of like IQ, like in terms of his decision making and defense, I don't think he was exactly where people expected him to be. But I think he has a lot of physical tools and ways to work as an NBA player. And that's why I think he's slightly underrated at 29. And he's somebody that I think a lot of teams will also have, like, maybe that fear of missing out on a wing guy who has his particular skill set.
Yeah, I mean, if he falls to 29, we're talking about Phoenix Suns, Utah Jazz, maybe even Philly in that range. And that would be a steal for them. They have the, you know, they have the ability to, they have the luxury, I should say, of being able to bring him along slowly, let him get stronger. Because I felt like that was probably the biggest issue for him, was he could make a move and he could get by a guy slightly, but any little bit of contact, it turned a straight line drive into like a banana cut or something like that. Mm-hmm. So he really struggled with his strength. I know there are a lot of comparisons to like Brandon Ingram, and I can see it a little bit, just kind of how they move, maybe not the same exact game, but how they move. And both guys I label as like skinny tough guys that like aren't afraid to throw their skinny body, you know, in the paint and not afraid of contact. So I can see somewhat of the similarities. All right, the last prospect I wanted to get your opinion on is Jeremiah Robinson Earl. It's crazy, man. You know, I feel old simply because I remember his dad, Lester Earl. And
magazine, man. I definitely remember.
Yeah, it's like, man, am I that old where I'm starting to, you know, the guys that I used to read about that were like in my era and their kids are now in the draft. Like, yeah, it was definitely a shocker to realize that I am that old. But what are your thoughts on him? I see him as just the ultimate glue guy, the typical Villanova guy that just comes in and he plays a role. He's tough. He knows how to win. I mean, I was a big fan last year, Sadiq Bey. And I said it over and over again. I wanted him in Portland. I still wish we would have. I mean, Rocco's been good, but yeah, I don't know. I think
he's having a really nice year. Yeah.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on him? And where do you think he'll be selected at?
Yeah, right now he is at number 37 on the composite board. And I'm guessing he's somewhere in that range. But he's somebody that I know that he didn't necessarily take like this enormous jump this year, but he certainly, I think, showed some, at least improvement. And like his 3-point percentage went down, free throw percentage went down. But I think he was like in better shape, still was like a really good scorer. And he always had that defensive acumen as well. Great communicator, like a guy who's going to be a great teammate. And I just think is going to work. Like you're saying, he's the ultimate glue guy. And I think he's just somebody who will come in there and be part of a winning team and just do what you really want out of him.
And where was he at on that list?
37.
That's like 20 spots higher than Tankathon. Tankathon has him as like 58. They're not high on him at all.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like you never know, like from whoever's board. But yeah, it's funny because I would be surprised if he went that low. But I guess not all of the indicators are necessary. Like I think with Tankathon, it goes heavily off of statistical indicators.
And that makes sense.
I think that may be a possible reason. But with Jeremiah Robinson Earl, I think so much of it is the intangibles. And I think that is going to be like a big reason why people are like, this guy is a pro, went to Villanova, and just shows really good awareness. Like he was always a really great passer and defensive communicator. So yeah, those are just a couple things that I think could have him. I almost think he could possibly slip into the late first round, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up being in the range where he is on the composite big board, but I could see him going some spots higher.
Yeah, it's interesting because Tankathon has him as being selected at number 58, but they have him 69th on their big board.
Yeah, they must.
they're not high on him at all. They actually have him below Svi Pons. They're not high on him at all. They have him below Drew Timmy, Charles Bassey. Luca Garza is ranked ahead of him on their list. So that's pretty interesting. I know this is a podcast and the people can't see your face, but if I could, your facial expression was priceless when I said Luca Garza.
Yeah. Well, I'm seeing some, like, he has McKinley Wright the fourth at 49. And McKinley Wright the fourth, fantastic college player, certainly helped Colorado win many a time. But when we're talking about NBA prospects, I think I certainly would have Jeremiah Robinson Earl higher on my list.
All right. Thank you for coming on. Where can the listeners find you and your great podcast?
I do a podcast with my brother. It's called Viseland. We appreciate anybody that subscribes or converses with us. I'm on Twitter, NBA Draft Mikey V. My brother, Jason Weisenberg, is at Jay Weisenberg, and you can find us at Viseland. You can also find some great draft content on at Pro Insight, and they're I work with Prospective Insight, and the composite big board that I was shouting out is at rookiescale.com. And I think that they're just going to have fantastic NBA draft resources. And Raphael, as always, thank you so much for having me on, and appreciate all the work you do here at Locked On NBA Draft. And of course with NBA Draft Junkies.
I can't wait, and I'll tease it. But the last few weeks, I've kind of slowed down a little bit. I've been so busy, but I've been doing little player breakdowns, and I've had a different guest on to talk about the prospect. So Mikey is going to talk about who I think is his favorite prospect, which is Chris Duarte. He's been high on him all season long before everyone else kind of jumped on the bandwagon. So I can't wait to record this episode and put it out on YouTube. So stay tuned for that. It's coming up on my YouTube channel. But thanks again, Mikey. It's been great as always. Looking forward to having you on again. And we are